Stand or take whatever posture works best for you for the reading of the gospel. Luke 16, 1 through 13. Then Jesus said to the disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a household steward, and he was reported as having squandered the rich man's possessions. The rich man summoned the steward and said, what is this that I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you cannot continue a steward any longer. So the steward said to himself, what shall I do? My Lord is taking the stewardship away from me. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I should do, so that when I am removed from stewardship, people will welcome me into their homes. And summoning each one of his Lord's debtors, he said to the first, how much do you owe my Lord? And he said, 100 jugs of oil. And the steward said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly, write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 containers of grain. He tells him, take your bill and write 80. And the Lord praised the dishonest steward because he acted prudently. For the children of this age are more prudent in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest... And I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of dishonest mammon, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the tents that endure for the age. Oh, Kevin, you are going to have fun with this one. Whoever is faithful in the least thing is also faithful in much, and whoever is dishonest in the least thing is also dishonest in much. If, therefore, you were not faithful with dishonest mammon, who will entrust you with true wealth? And if you were not faithful with what belongs to another, who will entrust you with what belongs to you? No household servant can serve two lords, for either he will hate the one and will love the other, or he will stand fast by the one and disdain the other. You cannot serve both God and mammon. The word of the Lord.
Be seated, please. And this is the time that we're going to send the kids off with that young man over there waving his hand for children's worship. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so.
Well, good morning, friends. I hope everyone can hear me okay. I just realized now I have no way of knowing whether you can or can't, so I'm just going to trust that you can.
Can, Kevin. We can.
Okay, good. Thanks. It is good to be with you this morning. It's strange for me not to be able to be with you in person. But certainly good to be with you in spirit and in, Zoom-ness or something along those lines. And it's been good to spend this space and this time with you. Thanks for creating this space. It's been good for my soul this morning. Also, I wanted to say thanks for the prayers this week for my family and for me. My family so far seems to have no symptoms, and I'm grateful for that. I am feeling much better today than I have been most of the week. Although I confess, I'm a little discouraged. I took a test this morning, and I'm still positive for COVID. So that's been frustrating, especially since I'm supposed to drive my son to school in a couple days. But I am doing my best to protest against it. I got fully dressed up this morning. You know, I'm on Zoom. How would you know? I got fully dressed up this morning. I even got dress socks on in protest against this quarantine thing. So I am doing my best here, and I'm certainly grateful for the support and prayers. Well, I'd like to say a few words this morning about that strange passage that Wendy just read. To go along with all else that we're doing today, I do want to honor this passage and say a few words about it for you. And I'd like to start, I think, with this. "And I tell you," Jesus says, "make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest mammon." You know, Jesus, I may need you to say that one more time, perhaps a bit more slowly. What is it you're asking us to do exactly? I mean, we get what you mean when you say we cannot serve both God and mammon. Mammon, by the way, simply being the Aramaic word for money or riches. And the reason we capitalize it in scripture, big M mammon, is because of our tendency to place it on a throne like an idol and bow before it. So we understand what you mean, Jesus, when you tell us we can't serve, can't worship both God and mammon. That makes sense. Like the way, say, humility and being a Cowboys fan are incompatible. The two simply don't work together, right? Of course, we may still struggle with our allegiances to God or mammon, but the notion itself, you can't serve God and mammon, that idea is at least intelligible. But what then, Jesus, does it mean when you also say, make friends for yourselves by means of this dishonest mammon? Side note, in the Gospel of Luke, as you may have noticed, every time Jesus talks about money, he refers to it in a fairly negative fashion. And there are two things to observe about that. One, a critique of mammon is not, at least not necessarily, a critique of those who happen to have mammon. And it's important that we see the difference there. While it may be true that it's more difficult for a rich person to get into the kingdom of heaven than for a camel to go through the eye of a needle, having mammon is not in itself a sign of a person's corruption or wickedness or dishonesty, which I suspect will be relieving to most of us here. But, and here's the second thing to note, all mammon, according to Jesus, is in fact dishonest. And it's important we understand that as well. When Jesus speaks of dishonest mammon, he's not making a distinction between honest mammon on the one hand and dishonest mammon on the other. Riches you earned fair and square and riches you earned by some form of quackery. Rather, what he's saying is that mammon, all of it, every bit of it, just is dishonest. The word in Greek for dishonest, adikia, most literally means unjust. Mammon just is, for Jesus, unjust. You see, in Jesus' day, something like 1% of the population was wealthy. Another 5 to 6% of the population was what we today call middle class. The remaining 90%+ were poor. 20 to 30% of that group, desperately poor. And was that because only 1% of the population was worthy of wealth? Hardly. Rather, mammon, with a capital M, is not simply the idol of wealth, but for Jesus, the very structure and organization by which that wealth is so inequitably distributed. And that, he says, is unjust. which is not to say that the wealthy were bad people, not necessarily anyway. And it's good to emphasize that. But the structure by which the wealthy remained wealthy while nearly everyone else was not, was bad. There was, as a matter of empirical fact, plenty of mammon available to feed and house and clothe and educate and provide care for everyone in Jesus' day. And because that did not happen, it was evidence enough for Jesus that the entire complex structure surrounding mammon was dishonest, adikia, unjust. By the way, side note, although it sounds like I'm whispering, I don't mean to be. My voice is still hoarse from this whole COVID stupid thing. So anyway, I'm trying to talk normal here, but I know I, in my own head, I sound the earth funny. So when Jesus says dishonest mammon, he's not talking about money gained by cheating on your taxes or robbing a bank or running a telemarketing scam on your neighbors. For Jesus, dishonest mammon is simply his term for money in general and the entire structure surrounding it. So why then, Jesus, are you telling us to make friends for ourselves by means of this dishonest mammon? What could that possibly be about? And the answer to that, he says, is found in the bizarre parable with which our passage begins. Bizarre because, quite frankly, the hero is a scoundrel, prone to selfishness and the squandering of money. You know, in the Christian tradition, it's not all that uncommon to see artistic portrayals of, say, the father of the prodigal son, or the sower spreading seed in the field, or the Samaritan helping a wounded soul by the roadside. Rembrandt and Van Gogh, for example, offer beautiful depictions of each. But have you ever seen a painting or a sculpture or a stained glass window or a Veda Banks patch depicting the swindling steward? Of course not. And yet, this fellow is precisely the person our parable points to as the paragon of prudence. And so again, we ask, what, Jesus, is going on here? And I think the answer is something like this. Flannery O'Connor once observed, when you can assume that your audience holds the same beliefs you do, you can relax and use more normal means of talking to it. But when you have to assume that it does not, then you have to make your vision apparent by shock. To the hard of hearing, you shout, and to the almost blind, you draw large and startling figures. Figures like the swindling steward, which of course simply begs the question, just who exactly is Jesus' audience here? For whom does he feel the need to draw such startling figures? Surely not his disciples, right? I mean, they don't even have any money. But isn't that precisely who verse 1 tells us Jesus is talking to? I'm not so sure. Consider this. Every once in a while, a guy I know will say to his lovely wife, Lisa, wouldn't it be great if everyone would put their dirty dishes away? If everyone would clean up after themselves? If everyone would be responsible for their own mess? And his wife will nod approvingly in response. Now, on the surface, it may appear as if this man is talking to his wife, save for this one crucial detail. He only ever says such things when his children are around. And the reality is, no one in the room ever fails to understand whom he's really talking to. Because the fact is, his wife's not the one who has the issues with cleaning up after herself. Of course, this guy could have just said all this directly to his children. But sometimes the circuitous route is far more effective. And I suspect something similar is occurring in Luke 16. On the surface, Jesus is talking to his disciples. They may even have been nodding along, but they are not the ones within earshot. They're not the only ones within earshot, as the verse immediately following our passage makes clear. The Pharisees, Luke tells us in verse 14, heard all of this. And just like with my wife and the dishes, it's not the disciples who have issues with mammon. Again, as verse 14 tells us, the Pharisees were lovers of money. The audience, in other words, and here's the point, are the religious folk, the spiritual leaders, the faithful, the comfortable, church-going middle-class souls, the ones with the mammon. The audience, in other words, in case it's not yet quite clear, are a group of people exactly like us. And because they love their money, Jesus can't assume they hold the same beliefs as he does. And so he has to make his vision apparent by shock. To the hard of hearing, he shouts, and for the almost blind, he draws large and startling figures, which is precisely what he's done with the swindling steward. Okay, well, now that you've got our attention, Jesus, just what is it you were trying to say? Just this, that you too have stewardship over a rather large portion of this world's estate, that you too are in charge of a significant amount of mammon. Again, this is not a moral assessment. It is simply a descriptive fact. We have a lot. But what is moral about this parable is the way we go about managing that mammon. In fact, the entire point is to see just that. We are, at most, stewards of what we possess. None of it, not one bit of it, ultimately is ours. Not really. We'll take none of it with us in the end. What Jesus hopes we will see is that we are not owners, but stewards. Our mammon is not our possession, not our prize for cleverness or hard work, but rather a responsibility we've been given. This wealth we carry ultimately belongs to someone else, the Lord of our estate. And our one task, the one charge we hold with regard to all of it, is to faithfully steward that mammon on the Lord's behalf, and not to be found to have squandered it when the accounting comes. And just how do we go about that? Rather like our steward. We make friends for ourselves by means of dishonest mammon. We build a kitchen for a family without charging any cost for labor. We give a car to our friends so their son can get to therapy appointments on time. We re-roof a home for a widow so she can live without worry of constant leaks, to name just a few things you, East County, have done as faithful stewards. The dishonest mammon is already in our hands, our pockets, our bank accounts. The only question is, what type of stewards will we be? The only question is, will we squander it or will we use it to make friends? I no longer call you servants, Jesus says in John 15, but friends, breaking down all manner of social and religious and economic hierarchies. And now he calls us to do the same.